Elle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Morning, my pleasure.
Now, first up, Elle, what are some of the changes that NDIS Minister Stuart Robert is planning to propose in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so he's announced what we're calling, I hope, a first step in tightening up some of the rules for the NDIS Quality and Safeguards Commission, which is a long way of saying the regulator for NDIS providers. So he's talking about increasing some powers, which is a good idea, to ban both providers and disability support workers from, you know, being able to deliver support under the NDIS. So that's people who, you know, are also not necessarily working in disability at the moment, because we know that some providers have gone from, you know, they've been banned in aged care and then they've come over and done being able to provide disability support work, or same with childcare. So it's kind of, I think, streamlining that process, and it's good, you know, we're calling it a good first step in terms of, you know, getting rid of some of the enormous gaps and chasms in the regulatory system that the terrible death of Anne-Marie Smith has exposed, as well as the deaths and abuse of other people with disability.
Absolutely. And is there any talk of how exactly these new powers will function?
Not yet. So we're looking forward to seeing the legislation and the details of this and how it's actually going to work. There have been different proposals over the years in terms of regulatory schemes. So we're looking forward to seeing the details of the legislation. But as I said, it's just a first step. What we've been calling for all the way along is for the Quality and Safeguards Commission to have more resources and more powers so that they can actually do the kinds of proactive work that we really want to. So at the moment, a lot of the work they do relies on people making complaints. And we really want them to be doing, you know, random spot checks, you know, to really be, you know, the sort of watchdog on the beat for us, for people with disability who are using the NDIS.
Of course. And so what are some of the safeguards that we already have in place to deal with issues of dodgy carers or providers?
So it's a little bit complicated, so I'll try and explain it as simply as I can. And that's, again, part of the problem. For a provider to actually provide services under the NDIS, they have to register. So that is a really quite lengthy process. There's quite a lot of hoops for people to jump through, and which is a good idea. And that providers also have to abide by what they call a code of conduct to maintain that registration. And that's all administered by the Quality and Safeguards Commission. But as we saw during COVID-19, you know, they're not particularly strong powers. So we were getting lots of reports from people with disability that providers were withdrawing supports altogether. So, you know, taking away the kinds of things that people need to, you know, get out of bed, to get on with their day, all at the same time while the Quality and Safeguards Commission was talking about how providers weren't meant to do that. So, so we saw in that instance that, you know, the way that the current system is working isn't terribly strong, and that we really do need some increased enforcement powers from the Quality and Safeguards Commission to be able to take action against providers who do the wrong thing.
Of course. And you mentioned, you know, they have to register and there's a code of conduct. And you know, in the past, Australia's actually was actually applauded on their social work. But what about training?
Yeah, I mean, I think training is one of those really big missing pieces of the puzzle. So one of the things that was put up before the last election by the ASU, Australian Services Union, was that all workers who are paid through the NDIS, for every hour that they work, it would accumulate a component of training. So when you did a certain amount of hours work under the NDIS, you were eligible for paid training. And I think that schemes like that are really good in terms of filling these gaps, because currently there really isn't huge amounts of resources for training. And I think that's a really good idea. I mean, it's one of the things every review into the NDIS has said. People with disability always say, we need people to have better training, and we need training around disability rights. We need training around, you know, the social model of disability, all of that kind of stuff. And that's the kind of thing that comes up in every single inquiry into the NDIS. So I think it's one of those things that needs to be looked at. One of the things that we are also really keen to see from the government is a response to this huge big review that was done into the NDIS last year called the TUNE Review. And the recommendations from that came out earlier this year. And of course, again, one of them was about training. So the government's kind of got this blueprint from the TUNE Review. And so we're really keen to see their response to that and how many of those recommendations they're going to be implementing, including training.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you know, with all of that, after we see these powers introduced, what are some of the next steps that need to be taken to ensure that people with disabilities don't fall through the gaps in the system?
Yeah, look, I think that is one of those incredibly good questions. And one of the things that we're doing as part of that, the whole reason we campaigned for a Disability Royal Commission was to look at exactly that, to look at where the gaps are and what we actually need to do about it. So we've also been asking the Royal Commission to see if they can do a kind of holistic look at these cases and see, you know, what happened and where things went wrong. So I think one of the things within the case with Anne-Marie Smith, she should never have only had one carer. For someone who needed as much support as she did, she should never have been put in that position where there was only one person who was coming in and out and engaging with her. I really want to see, you know, neighbours and communities also stepping up. So for a person with disability to be inside, for neighbours to know that they were inside for so long and no one knocking on the door makes me incredibly sad and upset. So I think that communities also need to be much more inclusive for people with disabilities. So, and then I think there needs to also be increased resourcing for disability advocacy. So lots of disability advocacy is run by people with disability, and we know that advocacy is a significant safeguarding for people with disability, both in terms of getting a better NDIS plan, so making sure you've got enough support, but also making sure that advocacy can help with lots of non-NDIS related stuff as well.
Of course. Now, in a broader sense, your organisation recently completed it explored the financial impact of the COVID pandemic on people with disabilities. What were some of your findings?
Yeah, so we were hearing anecdotally that people were having a really hard time during COVID-19. So I'm a person with disability and I found it hard and I've got a job. So we wanted to find out what the impact had been for people with disabilities. So we did a little survey and the results were pretty stark. So there were 91% of people found that they'd had increased expenses. So the biggest increase in expenses was groceries and food. So that included delivery costs. The panic buying that went on had a huge impact on people with disability. Other things were medication and healthcare, internet and phone, and an increased cost of sanitation and hygiene equipment. So lots of people with disability use hygiene equipment, sanitation equipment regularly, like not just for a pandemic. So when the kind of panic buying of things like sanitizer happened, it made getting access to that kind of gear really hard and really expensive.
Absolutely. Well, Elle, thank you so, so much for joining us today. It's been really great having a chat about this.
Pleasure, Ruby. Thank you very much.